Let's read together 2 Corinthians chapter 10. In this chapter, Paul vindicates himself and his authority as an apostle in view of the false teachers who were questioning Paul's apostleship. Let's begin by reading the first 12 verses. 2 Corinthians chapter 10, beginning at verse 1. Now I, Paul, myself, am pleading with you by the meekness and gentleness of Christ, who in the presence am lowly among you, but being absent am bold toward you. But I beg you that when I am present, I may not be bold with that confidence by which I intend to be bold against some, who think of us as if we walked according to the flesh. For though we walk in the flesh, we do not war according to the flesh. For the weapons of our warfare are not carnal, but mighty in God for pulling down strongholds, casting down arguments and every high thing that exalts itself against the knowledge of God, bringing every thought into captivity to the obedience of Christ, and being ready to punish all disobedience when your obedience is fulfilled. Do you look at things according to the outward appearance? If anyone is convinced in himself that he is Christ, let him again consider this in himself, that just as he is Christ, even so we are Christ. For even if I should boast somewhat more about our authority, which the Lord gave us for edification and not for your destruction, I shall not be ashamed, lest I seem to terrify you by letters. For his letters, they say, are weighty and powerful, but his bodily presence is weak and his speech contemptible. Let such a person consider this, that what we are in word by letters when we are absent, such we will also be indeed when we are present. For we dare not class ourselves or compare ourselves with those who commend themselves, but they, measuring themselves by themselves and comparing themselves among themselves, are not wise. Let's begin our study this morning with some background notes. We've seen that chapters 8 and 9 of 2 Corinthians, the two chapters in the Bible that emphasize Christian giving, principles of Christian giving in chapter 8 and rewards for Christian giving in chapter 9. Now here in chapter 10, Paul returns to a subject that he touched on before and one of his main reasons for writing this epistle to the Corinthians. When Titus returned from Corinth with the good news that the Corinthian Christians had shown a good response to Paul's sorrowful letter, remember Titus also brought the bad news that some false teachers had infiltrated the Corinthian church and they were questioning and undermining Paul's authority as an apostle. Now, who were these false teachers anyway? They were probably Judaizers from Jerusalem preaching the importance of keeping the law of Moses. Were they true believers or unbelievers? Probably a mixture of both. Verse 7 here would indicate that some of these detractors were true believers. They were just involved in false teaching. Verse 7 once again. Do you look at things according to the outward appearance? If anyone is convinced in himself that he is Christ, let him again consider this in himself, that just as he is Christ, even so we are Christ. This verse would certainly indicate that some of these detractors of the Apostle Paul were true believers, just involved in false teaching. On the other hand, 2 Corinthians chapter 11, verses 13 and 14 would indicate that some of these false teachers were definitely unbelievers. I'm reading 2 Corinthians chapter 11, verses 13 and 14. For such are false apostles, deceitful workers, transforming themselves into apostles of Christ. And no wonder, for Satan himself transforms himself into an angel of light. 2 Corinthians 11, 13 and 14. So there seems to have been a mixture of both believers and unbelievers involved in this false teaching and questioning of Paul's apostolic authority. Remember, they accused Paul of vacillating in his plans, chapter 1. And they were saying that Paul did not have the proper letters of commendation, chapter 3. Look back at chapter 3 and verse 1. Do we begin again to commend ourselves, or do we need, as some others, epistles of commendation to you or letters of commendation from you? Here in chapter 10, we see that these false teachers were saying that Paul's bark was worse than his bite. Look again at verse 10. For his letters, they say, are weighty and powerful, but his bodily presence is weak and his speech contemptible. In other words, these false teachers were saying that Paul wrote powerful letters, but didn't back them up with power, and he certainly did not have an impressive personal presence befitting an apostle. That's what these false teachers were saying. Well, Paul refutes all this bad press here as he defends his apostleship. And that brings us then to our doctrinal teaching points for this chapter, 2 Corinthians chapter 10. So doctrinal or teaching point number one, believers should not fight with weapons of the flesh. Believers should not fight with weapons of the flesh. Verse 3, for though we walk in the flesh, we do not war according to the flesh. Paul is obviously talking about spiritual warfare here. And this certainly reminds us of the well-known spiritual warfare passage in Ephesians chapter 6, doesn't it? I'm reading Ephesians chapter 6, verses 12 and 13. For we do not wrestle against flesh and blood, but against principalities, against powers, against the rulers of darkness of this age, against spiritual hosts of wickedness in the heavenly places. Therefore, take up the whole armor of God, that you may be able to withstand in the evil day, and having done all, to stand. Ephesians 6, verses 12 and 13. Here in 2 Corinthians chapter 10, Paul sees his conflict with the false teachers at Corinth who are questioning and undermining his apostolic authority as spiritual warfare. He wanted the Corinthians, who were so impressed by outward appearances, verse 7, to know that they were on the wrong track. Paul acknowledged that he was not impressive in his personal appearance and speech, verse 10. But that was the sphere of the flesh, and that's not what really mattered. In spiritual warfare, the weapons are not of the flesh, such as eloquence and looks and impressive credentials. No, it is the power of the Holy Spirit through prayer and obedience to the word that, verse 5, destroys arguments and every high thing that exalts itself against the knowledge of God, bringing every thought into captivity to the obedience of Christ. 2 Corinthians 10, verse 5. And spiritual warfare would include punishment of disobedience there at Corinth because of the false teaching of the false apostles. So Corinthians, says Paul, I don't want to scare you, verse 9, but the false apostles there who are claiming that I am not an apostle, they'd better be warned. This is spiritual warfare. As in Paul's day, so in our own day, believers should not fight with weapons of the flesh. Now, whether it be spiritual warfare refuting godless evolution or secular humanism that pervades our culture and society, or whether it be spiritual warfare in confronting false teaching in the church, believers should not fight with weapons of the flesh. Doctrinal point number two, believers should not take credit for the work of another. Believers should not take credit for the work of another. Verses 13 through 18. We, however, will not boast beyond measure, but within the limits of the sphere which God appointed us, a sphere which especially includes you. For we are not overextending ourselves as though our authority did not extend to you, for it was to you that we came with the gospel of Christ. Not boasting of things beyond measure, that is, in other men's labors, but having hope that as your faith is increased, we shall be greatly enlarged by you in our sphere. To preach the gospel in the regions beyond you, and not to boast in another man's sphere of accomplishment. But he who glories, let him glory in the Lord. For not he who commends himself is approved, but whom the Lord commends. In 1 Corinthians chapter 12, in reference to spiritual gifts, we read beginning with verse 4, there are diversities of gifts, but the same Spirit. There are differences of ministries, but the same Lord. And there are diversities of activities, but it is the same God who works all in all. 1 Corinthians chapter 12, verses 4 through 6. So we see that in reference to spiritual gifts, there are different kinds of spiritual gifts and different ministries where these gifts are used and different effects or workings that God gives. Our responsibility is not to try and use gifts that we don't have and not to hurt or infringe on another believer's ministry. Now here in 2 Corinthians chapter 10, we find that there are also different spheres or fields of service that God gives. We are not to invade or take credit for the fields of Christian service that God has given to other believers. Sheep stealing is unbiblical. This is exactly what Paul's antagonists were doing. Paul had established the church at Corinth, verse 14. And now these Judaizers had come into Paul's sphere of service and were trying to take credit for Paul's labors. This is wrong, then and today. There's plenty of space and opportunity in this world for you to have your own sphere or field of service. Paul said in verse 16 that his future plans were to move on beyond Corinth and preach the gospel in new territory. He would not take credit for some other believer's sphere of service. Now, obviously, there's going to be some overlap in our different spheres or fields of service. But keep in mind that God has uniquely given you not only certain spiritual gifts to be used in the ministry, but he's also given you a sphere of service in which to use your God-given spiritual gifts and natural talents as well. There's plenty of room to serve the Lord with both spiritual gifts and natural talents. We don't have to steal some other believer's field of service. Believers should not take credit for the work of another. Now, what about practical application from 2 Corinthians chapter 10? Don't let any thought escape. Don't let any thought escape. Verse 5, once again, casting down arguments and every high thing that exalts itself against the knowledge of God, bringing every thought into captivity to the obedience of Christ. Notice that it does not just say that we are taking every action into captivity to the obedience of Christ, but even every thought into captivity to the obedience of Christ. Now let me ask you a question. How is your thought life? Suppose your thought life could be read by others. Listen, your thought life is an open book to God. How pleasing it must be to the heart of God when we take every thought and make it obedient to Christ. If ever there was a verse in the Bible to exhort us to guard what videos and TV programs we watch and what books and magazines we read, this is it. 2 Corinthians chapter 10, verse 5. Casting down arguments and every high thing that exalts itself against the knowledge of God, bringing every thought into captivity to the obedience of Christ. So once again, the question, how is your thought life? Don't let any thought escape.